translation. A living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with the form of a woman, foolishly looks upon Maya in the form of a man, her husband, as the bestower of wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. From this verse, it appears that a woman is also supposed to have been a man in his, her, previous life. And due to his attachment to his wife, he now has the body of a woman. Bhagavad Gita confirms this. A man gets his next life's birth according to what he thinks of at the time of death. If someone is too attached to his wife, naturally he thinks of his wife at the time of death, and in his next life he takes the body of a woman. Similarly, if a woman thinks of her husband at the time of death, naturally she gets the body of a man in the next life. In the Hindu scriptures, therefore, woman's chastity and devotion to man is greatly emphasized. A woman's attachment to her husband may elevate her to the body of a man in her next life, but a man's attachment to a woman will degrade him, and in his next life he will get the body of a woman. We should always remember, as it is stated in Bhagavad Gita, that both the gross and subtle material bodies are dresses. They are the shirt and coat of the living entity. To be either a woman or a man only involves one's bodily dress. The soul in nature is actually the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. Every living entity, being classified as energy, is supposed to be originally a woman or one who is enjoyed. In the body of a man, there is a greater opportunity to get out of the material clutches. There is less opportunity in the body of a woman. In this verse, it is indicated that the body of a man should not be misused through forming an attachment to women and thus becoming too entangled in material enjoyment, which will result in getting the body of a woman in the next life. A woman is generally found fond of household prosperity, ornaments, furniture, and dresses. She is satisfied when the husband supplies all these things sufficiently. The relationship between man and woman is very complicated, but the substance is that one who aspires to ascend to the transcendental stage of spiritual realization should be very careful in accepting the association of a woman. In the stage of Krishna consciousness, however, such restriction of association may be slackened, because if a man's and woman's attachment is not to each other, but to Krishna, then both of them are equally eligible to get out of the material entanglement and reach the abode of Krishna. As it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, anyone who seriously takes to Krishna consciousness, whether in the lowest species of life, or a woman, or of the less intelligent classes, such as the mercantile and laborer class, will go back home, back to Godhead, and reach the abode of Krishna. A man should not be attached to a woman, nor should a woman be attached to a man. Both man and woman should be attached to the service of the Lord. Then there is the possibility of liberation from material entanglement for both of them. Om Anjana Timurandasya Janjana Shalakaya Chakshurinulitavena Tasma Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Vayam Rupakada Mayam Tadati Swapitantikam. So the translation again. A living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with the form of a woman, foolishly looks upon Maya in the form of a man, her husband, as the bestower of wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. So this is the counterpart of the previous verse, as mentioned yesterday. So, for a man, a woman represents Maya, and for a woman, a man represents Maya, or material illusion, which attaches one to the cycle of repeated birth and death. So the real aim of human life is to become free from this entanglement. And so then, therefore, one is warned about the dynamics of the process of entanglement. So the real goal of human life is to attain self-realization, which means to know what you really are. So it's explained that this male or female form is merely an external dress for the living entity. So we tend to be attached to these bodies and to identify ourselves with our physical bodies. And the result then is that we tend to accept the entire program of activity which is dictated by that particular bodily form. And we tend to think, well, this is what I want to do, and these are my rights, and these are my opportunities, and so forth. And if I don't get to do this, I will be frustrated. But this is based on the illusion of thinking that I am the body. As a matter of fact, one's real interest is completely different. The Brahma Samhita has an interesting, sheds some interesting light on this in the description of the creation of the material world. I'll just read a few verses here. There's some interesting points which emerge. So we'll start here. It is stated that the Lord of Gokula is the transcendental supreme Godhead, the own self of eternal ecstasy. He is the superior of all superiors and is busily engaged in the enjoyment of the transcendental realm and has no association with his mundane potency. Krishna never consorts with his illusory energy. Still, her connection is not entirely cut off from the absolute truth. When he intends to create the material world, the amorous pastime in which he engages by consorting with his own spiritual chit potency, Rama, by casting his glance at the deluding energy in the shape of sending his time energy, is an auxiliary activity. I'll explain a bit about what these verses are saying once I get to the punchline here. Then there's further description. Here the secondary process of association with Maya is described. Rama Devi, the spiritual chit potency, beloved consort of the Supreme Lord, is the regulatrix of all entities. The divine plenary portion of Krishna creates the mundane world. At creation there appears a divine halo of the nature of his own subjective portion, Svamsa. This halo is divine Shambhu, the masculine symbol or manifested emblem of the Supreme Lord. This halo is the dim twilight reflection of the supreme eternal effulgence. This masculine symbol is the subjective portion of divinity who functions as progenitor of the mundane world, subject to the supreme regulatrix, Niyati. The conceiving potency in regard to mundane creation makes her appearance out of the supreme regulatrix. She is Maya, the limited, non-absolute, apara potency, the symbol of mundane feminine productivity. The intercourse of these two brings forth the faculty of perverted cognition, the reflection of the seed of the procreative desire of the Supreme Lord. All offspring of the consort of the great Lord, Maheshvara, of this mundane world, are of the nature of the embodiment of the mundane masculine and feminine generative organs. So I'll explain a little bit about what was said there. So we begin here with a reference to Krishna, the Lord of Gokula. So it's pointed out that he is engaged in enjoyment in the transcendental realm and he has no association with his mundane potency. So, actually, the principle of male and female is to be found even in the transcendental realm, because the Supreme Godhead, in fact, is Radha and Krishna. So, Krishna is engaging in eternal pastimes with his internal potency, Radharani, in the spiritual world. But this is quite a different situation from the material world. So, the next verses describe how the material world is created, basically, and what happens. So First of all, there's the question of Krishna's illusory energy. So what is that? Well, there's reference here to Krishna's spiritual chit potency, Rama. Well, that is another name for Lakshmi, who is expanded from Radharani. So Krishna's internal potency is Radharani. That's the female counterpart of Krishna. So an expansion of Radharani is Rama, or Rama Devi. So it is said that she is the regulatrix of all entities. That means controller or regulator. So it is stated here that from this supreme regulatrix, the conceiving potency in regard to mundane creation makes her appearance. So from Rama Devi, Maya is produced. So this Maya is the controlling power of the material world on the female side. So there's also a controlling power of the material world on the male side. So it's explained here how that also comes about. It says the divine plenary portion of Krishna creates the mundane world. Well, this is referring to Mahavishnu, who's an expansion of Krishna. So at creation there appears a divine halo of the nature of his own subjective portion. This halo is divine Shambhu, the masculine symbol or manifested emblem of the Supreme Lord. So Shambhu is the prototype Shiva for all of the universes. He expands into each universe as in the form of Shiva. So he actually comes in contact with the material energy. So that is what is being described here. The intercourse between of these two beings brings forth the faculty of perverted cognition, the reflection of the seed of the procreative desire of the Supreme Lord. So Shiva, or Maheshwara, comes into direct contact with Maya, or Durga. And so there is offspring, and that is described here as the faculty of perverted cognition. So that's an interesting point. In the spiritual world, you have true cognition. That is, reality is seen as it truly is. But the result of the intercourse between these two material beings who have been produced is the faculty of perverted cognition, or false ego, or ahankara. So that is described. And this is said to be the reflection of the seed of the procreative desire of the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord desired to create the material world, and as a result, he generated all the living beings in the material world through the effect of his glance. So this is procreative desire. But a reflection of this results in this faculty of perverted cognition. So perverted cognition has something to do with procreative desire. That is what is being indicated here. And then the next verse says that all offspring of the consort of the great Lord, Maheshwara, of this mundane world are of the nature of the embodiment of the mundane masculine and feminine generative organs. So this is the description of what happens next. So what develops is that Maheshwara, or Shiva, and Durga have intercourse, and the result is that many beings are produced. And they are the embodiment of the masculine and feminine generative organs. So the whole thing is sex from then on. That's basically what's going on. And these bodies that are produced are basically arrangements for sex, which in turn produces more bodies of the same type. And in this way, the whole process continues. So that is the description. Now, there's some interesting points here which come up in a couple of further verses. This one struck me as interesting. It is said, the function of Shambhu in relation to Jiva's is that this universe enshrining the mundane, egotistic principle has originated from Shambhu. Now, the statement being made here, the Jiva, word Jiva, of course, refers to the soul. So, these beings who are experiencing perverted cognition are the conditioned souls. And they have been injected into this material matrix. And they're being given bodies which are basically male and female generative organs with apparatus to allow those to function. So, what are they doing in that situation? Well, so it's stated here, the function of Shambhu in relation to these conditioned souls who have been put into that situation is that he's the one who created this universe with this faculty of perverted cognition. That's the only relationship. So you don't really have a personal relationship with Shambhu or with this universe. Your relationship is simply he's the one who is responsible for creating this situation. Now then again it is stated in another verse, a little bit later on, the same Jiva is eternal and is for eternity and without a beginning joined to the Supreme Lord by the tie of an eternal kinship. He is transcendental spiritual potency. So, it is stating here that this Jiva soul has an eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. That's the original Supreme Lord that we started with, the Lord of Gokula. So, this is the tie of an eternal kinship. Now, in this world, we tend to be very concerned about kinship. People are concerned about their relatives. And if they don't have relatives, they're concerned about generating some new relatives through this sex reproduction process. So, but it is stated here that actually you don't have any relation at all with this universe or with the one who is originating it, namely Shambhu. Your only relation is that he's the one who's put the whole thing together. But you do have a tie of an eternal kinship with the Lord of Gokula. And your true nature is that you are transcendental spiritual potency. So, what this is saying then is that our relationship with this world in which these bodies created for sexual reproduction are proceeding to reproduce successive generations and so on, we actually have nothing to do with that. It's completely foreign to us. And we only think we have something to do with it because of the faculty of perverted cognition, which has trapped us in this situation. But our real relationship is with Krishna in the transcendental world. So that's the basic point that is being made here. So it's interesting to see how, in one sense, to see how mechanical the whole thing is. Actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati makes a point concerning this verse about the masculine and feminine generative organs. He points out, let's see, where does he first say this? Oh, yeah, let's see. Somewhere like that. Yeah, he says, the feature that is of special significance is that although such expressions as the generative organs of male and female are indecorous, yet in scientific literature these words, expressing the above-mentioned principles, are exceedingly wholesome and productive of abiding value. Indecorum is merely an entity pertaining to the external custom of society. But science, and especially the highest science, cannot destroy the true entity by deference to social custom. Wherefore, in order to demonstrate the seed of mundane sex desire, the basic principle of this phenomenal world, the use of those identical words is indispensable. So he's saying that basically what we're seeing here is a scientific presentation of what is really at the root of this mundane world. So that is being explained so that we can understand what our real situation is and free ourselves from attachment to this mundane situation. So going back to the verse for today, it's basically saying that a woman will be attached to the form of a man and basically to sex life, and this is Maya, and a man will tend to be attached to the form of a woman, and this is also Maya, and we should try to become free of this by limiting that attachment and that association, because our real situation is that we're eternal spirit souls, and actually we have nothing to do with this material process of reproduction and so forth. It's actually foreign to our nature. So what we have to do then is overcome this phenomenon of false ego or perverted cognition. So that's the thing that is difficult to do. And in that connection, association is very important, because we tend to take in patterns of thinking from other persons. It's a natural tendency. And so we tend to think in accordance with the association that we have. So Srila Prabhupada makes this point here concerning men and women alternating sex in various births. Apparently this is also something that goes on. So as a result of association, one flip-flops through different states of consciousness, but basically one remains on the same mundane platform. So anyway, there's some observations there. I could also make some observations concerning the theory of evolution. May as well bring that in. Because it is described here, you see, according to the theory of evolution, sex is basic to the process of the origin of species. Because basically what you have is sexual reproduction in which successive offspring that are produced have slight variations in form. They inherit their form from their ancestors, but there will be very small variations that come up, and these are called mutations. And the Darwinian idea is that these are random. That is, they just occur by chance. And then the concept is that by selection, certain variations will be favored in the struggle for survival. And as a result, the form of the species will gradually change over time, and in this way, all the different species that we know have come into being. That's the theory. So it's based on the idea of reproduction. Of course, one immediate impediment to that is that reproduction is not a simple thing. You need quite a bit of apparatus for that. And until you have that apparatus, how then can you have the process of evolution? And the Darwinists have never really answered this. It's a bit of a problem. But anyway, the Vedic version is in some ways similar, but in other ways quite different to the theory of evolution. Because there it is also said that you have this process of sexual reproduction going way back to some original ancestors. In this case, though, the original ancestors are identified here as Maheshwara and Durga. So you have reproduction through sex, and you also have changes in the bodily forms. But there the changes are controlled by higher power, and everything is done by design. And in fact, in the Bhagavatam, you can read how different forms are produced by reproduction coming from beings who have a quite different form. For example, the look at the bird species. The somebody must fool with this, because it was working once and then it starts feeding back. But anyway, was one daughter of Daksha. She had human form, and she was a demigoddess. So she became married to Kashyapa, who was a great rishi in Prajapati. As a result, she laid two eggs. This seems... seems a bit unusual, but she did that. They both hatched out. From one of them, Garuda was born, who is a very large bird, extremely powerful. From another, Anuru was born. He was also a bird, and also quite powerful, although it was said that he was crippled, interestingly enough. So Anuru ultimately became the charioteer for the sun god. He needed a job in which he could sit down. Whereas Garuda became the carrier of Lord Vishnu. But in any case, this is the process. Now, from Anuru, there were further offspring in bird form, including Sampati and Jatayu, who appear in the Ramayana. And from Sampati and Jatayu, there were further generations. Now, these were beings with bird form, but an interesting point is they could assume human form. So their bodies were built in a different way than these bodies. We have a very low grade of body, actually. First of all, it has one fixed form, and that's it. Basically, these bodies are made of clay that's sort of stuck together, mixed with a lot of water. And you can see that once it dies, eventually you'll get clay and water if you wait long enough. But the bodies of these demigods are of a different constitution. So they actually have the power to change form at will. So even Jatayu and Sampati would occasionally assume a human form and go and talk with different rishis and so forth. But they spend a lot of time in bird form also. So there were successive generations coming down from them, and gradually you come down to ordinary birds who simply are stuck in their particular species, so they reproduce according to their kind, and also they have no highly developed intelligence. So that's one example of the process of generation of the species according to the Vedic literature. So it does occur by a process of reproduction. So, about 8:30, are there any questions or comments? Yeah? Yes. Rama Devi. Yeah, R-A-M-A with a long A. Pardon me? Parvati comes from her. That's what was explained in these verses. The basic explanation given here, I'll just turn to that, is that... Yes, here it is. It's first stated that from Mahavishnu, Shambhu expands. And it is said, at the creation there appears a divine halo of the nature of his own subjective portion. This halo is divine Shambhu. So he is expanded from Mahavishnu. And Shiva, basically he is Sada Shiva, and the different manifestations of Rudra or Shiva expand from him. On the other hand, it is also stated that the conceiving potency in regard to mundane creation makes her appearance out of the supreme regulatrix, who was identified just up the page here as Rama Devi. So that is the origin then of Mahamaya, or Durga, and so on. That's the situation.
So, what
Well, Brahma did also. It's a question of the level at which you're looking at the description. So Brahma created the world in the form of an engineer who arranged the planetary systems, and he generated different mental suns and so on and so forth. The creation by Shiva and Durga is at a more fundamental level, and it is stated here, the intercourse of these two beings brings forth the faculty of perverted cognition, the reflection of the seed of procreative desire of the Supreme Lord. So that is prior to the activities of Brahma, because you already have the faculty of perverted cognition when Brahma is engaging in his activities. So on the one hand, the activity of Shiva and Maya is more fundamental. It's at a more fundamental level. On the other hand, Shiva makes his entrance on the stage, as it were, of the material world by appearing from Brahma. For example, in the case where Brahma was offended by the four Kumaras who refused to create progeny, then Rudra came forth from his forehead when he manifested anger. But that's similar to an actor appearing on the stage at a certain point. So, that's the situation, yeah? Well, the Sanskrit word put in brackets after that is svamsa, which would seem to say own part. Amsa is part. Amsa, when we say part and parcel, we use the word amsa. It means limb also. Sva means one's own. So svamsa would seem to, it says one's own part and parcel, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is translating that as subjective portion. Own portion would be another way to put it. Which could simply mean nothing more than the fact that Shambhu is his own expansion. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, yes, Vibhinamsa is used to refer to the jiva-tattva. So, svamsa, well, of course, it's also explained that Shambhu is sort of a tattva all of his own, because he's not exactly Vishnu-tattva. He's not jiva-tattva either. He's a separate tattva. And it's explained that the relation between Shambhu and Vishnu is like that between yogurt and milk. There you have a one-way transformation. You can turn milk into yogurt, but you can't turn yogurt into milk. Yeah? Yeah. Right. Yeah, Vijayanandananda was explaining that Shambhu or Shiva has come in contact with the material energy, and Vishnu never comes in contact with the material energy. But yet, Vishnu is the creator and controller of everything. So how does he do that if he never comes in contact with the material energy? Well, he expands himself as Shambhu, who comes in contact with the material energy. So the point of creation of the mundane reality occurs when Lord Vishnu manifests Shambhu. That's sort of the dividing line between the transcendental and the material realm. And likewise, on the female side, when Rama Devi generates Maya, that would be the female counterpart of that. So then the result is the creation of the faculty of perverted cognition, then, the principle of illusion. And that fits into the with the point that Shiva is in charge of the false ego and the principle of ignorance, or tamagun. So he's responsible for the creation of perverted cognition or illusion. So, yeah? Yes. So did Brahma. Yes. Originally, there's only one entity, and that's Vishnu. Well, in fact, Krishna. Vishnu is the expansion of Krishna, but Vishnu is on the same level as Krishna. That is just Krishna carrying out a particular role. Just as, for example, a human may be seen playing with his family, with his children, but he also may be the high court judge. So when he assumes his role as high court judge, he's wearing black robes and he's very formal and very strict. But then you see him getting down on the floor with his children and so forth when he's not playing the role of the high court judge. So Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in his form as Vishnu, he is the controller of everything. So Vishnu, the difference between Vishnu and Krishna is that as Vishnu, Krishna is manifesting his divine opulence and power. Whereas as Krishna, he is manifesting his intimate pastime. So that's the original form. And so in Goloka, you have Krishna with his eternal pastimes, and in Vaikuntha, you have his expression as Vishnu, in which he is the supreme king or supreme ruler, and is very opulent. So Shambhu is generated from one of the expansions of Vishnu, namely Mahavishnu, who is the creator of the material universes. So Brahma is also expanded from Vishnu. And very often Brahma is a jiva soul who is occupying a particular generated body. And that body is generated from the lotus coming from the navel of Lord Vishnu. So both Brahma and Shambhu have an origin. But, of course, the origin of Shambhu might be hard to trace out in terms of material time. That's another thing to take into account, the whole issue of the time potency and the creation. Anyway, so any other one more question? Yeah. That's true. And when Vishnu is referred to in reference to Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, the Vishnu in particular, I believe, would be generally Kshiradakshay Vishnu, specifically the form of Vishnu who appears and engages in activity within this material world. And he's the source of the various incarnations that take place, such as, Lord Varaha, and so on and so forth. So, okay, that's about it. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.